If the gentleman of the committee is upset or unable to perform the function of the chairperson, the committee must let another of its members as acting chairperson. An acting chairperson performs the function to make exercise the power of the chairperson. Can I call for a nomination for an acting chairperson?
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, GM, CFO, and Davis Watson. And teacher. And everyone else, and important and my colleagues and comrades, I wish to nominate Tony Reddings and Bruni as the acting chairperson in the absence of our chairperson.
Thank you, Angela. Any second for the nomination?
Thank you, I second the nomination.
Any further nomination? Any further nomination?
Will the votes be by secret ballot or?
Thank you, members. In the absence of no further nomination, I call upon anything we need to take.
Good morning, Judge Mokhoeng Mokhoeng. I know I'm on record, so you can assume it. Thank you for the short exercise that you just unfolded. Morning to the committee as a collective, and morning to our executives who are in attendance, the Deputy Ministers, Mashekho Dlamini, and Deputy Minister Kwacha. Good morning to our officials of the department, the acting director general, Ms. Ashley. Remember, I said they must not call it in present day Ashara, they must say Ashray. Okay. Good morning to you and the team of executive management of the department, relevant section. Good morning to our stakeholders. Professor Rutho, I no longer know you. Why are you so scarce, bro? Good morning to Prof. Hall and the delegation from PLA, GWC. One day I'll tell you about my passion for UWC, but that one day, and there are other stakeholders also. But they will indicate I've not called for the register before, so excuse me if I don't mention other stakeholders by name. It's not my bias towards UWC. It's simply because I will do as we go once I get the register. I look much more professional than now. But everyone is welcome. We are just, I'm just making a 2 points in my brief remarks. Thank you. Before I proceed, thank you, Honorable Madeira, for the confidence you always shown in me. All the time, you never failed to nominate me, Honorable Madeira. I really feel honored. This is the mandate from your party that you really always never failed to execute. I will report back to the my principles about the last work you always do. Thank you. I thought you were raising your hand today to really propose the rotation, you know. But you simply stick to your guns, Honourable Mandela. I'm singling you out. I'm noting that you never fail, and it's from the bottom of my heart. But thank you. I have been asked by the acting electoral officer, or by the electoral officer in the council. I don't know how it's defined in the rules, but I may define that very comfortably. For she made an indication. She made an indication, and I just would like to invite the meeting to think carefully about that in terms of what role I may play in pointing at him. She then says the acting chairperson has the powers of the chairperson. I do know that that emanates from the rules. I almost thank her for liking me so much, but it does emanate from the rules. But thank you so much, electoral officer. You have now turned to be the committee secretary once again. Thank you. So I will try and, to the best of my ability, exercise the duties of a chair, which are generic in terms of parliament on committees generally. All rules of parliament actually apply. As we sit here, colleagues, going into my two main points, as we sit here in our own SADC region, we will be aware of the development. And this development, specifically in Zimbabwe, which is not a subject of this meeting, but I may not sit as a politician and sit in a meeting as if I'm chairing a mortuary meeting or something there. But the development in SADC around the intelligentsia, in particular Zimbabwe, around the leadership of all parties, really, not in a party political sense, to theorize the space and time. To theorize the space and time. Intelligentsia, to theorize, as someone has said, so many books will be written about the developments this week and probably from last week in Zimbabwe, obviously with reminiscences and ramifications and all that. So many books will be written, but what lessons to draw from that for our own parliament, for our own democracy, for our own political parties, for our own people, you know. John Slovo, one of the South African high-level intelligentsia, wrote in 1989 when there was a collapse in the Eastern European government, and he writes a paper, he says they had socialism failed, and he says those were popular revolts against unpopular regimes. You'll find that sentence, I'm going to use verbatim, I've not revised it in about 20 years, but I know because it struck me the point that Joe Slovo was making. Popular revolts against unpopular regimes, and I am not mechanically translating it to Zimbabwe, but I'm saying intelligentsia and leaders, organs of civil society, let us theorize what is taking place in our own region and filter it right through to our committees, to our structures, to our constituencies, to our people generally, you know. That's the point I would make. I would make and think that I feel proud to raise it as my opening remark generally about our context. If I was somewhere in Palestine or in that other region or somewhere in Latin America, then it's relevant to contextualize there. There were issues about rules that I had noted, but I think I would skip them and instead perhaps refer to them as and when they may arise in the meeting. When one was anticipating that I may be asked to do a certain task that I'm doing now, one had to revise the rules from back page to back page, front page to back page, and thought there are certain highlights to make, but as I'm saying, just to save us time. Suffice to say that Honorable DMs and the plus our beloved stakeholders, we have called this meeting subsequent to public hearings that we have held across the country, all 9 provinces were covered with at least 2 sites per province. I don't know if Gauteng was 2 though, but 2 sites per province generally, and then at extreme ends of each province. For instance, in the Western Cape, you take some town in the East Coast, George or Mossel Bay, and take another one, Glen Williams, in the West Coast, further up. So to broaden the scope and participation and sampling of our people's views. So we are here now to really round up the public hearings. To round up the public hearings by taking stakeholders nationally, thanks to those stakeholders that submitted in writing, we will, with the support team, I don't know if I did acknowledge you, thank you very much, I'm sorry for that omission, with the support team of the committee, we will be synthesizing and aligning everything that has been submitted, both in writing and orally. When we were doing rounds in the provinces, we would say to stakeholders, even if your submission is in writing, it's still powerful and carries the same weight or even more than if you speak to the mic. And it looks like our people have not yet understood that. But it's very, very essential to get a submission in writing, because we can refer, cross-refer, and get back to the issue. We can always talk to ourselves, talk to the committee, and the committee might wish to talk to among themselves, because they may be coming from different persuasions. If the submission is in writing, it's much more easier to seek to find convergence, because that's the whole idea, convergence on how to formulate the actual law at the end. So, now we've asked for national stakeholders. National in the sense that stakeholders who operate in their scope nationally. You might just be located as Nkuzi in Limpopo, but the phenomenon you might be looking at, quite transversally, as it manifests itself anywhere in any other province, if you were taking it legally as class action, right? So there's that. I may have omitted the issue about apologies, but I'll just come to it in the committee center, if there should be any, and also on the side of the department or other stakeholders. So I was just wrapping up the point about the purpose of today. We welcome submissions. They don't have to depart from our departure point. In the world of the intelligentsia, one fellow was Galileo Galilei. He lived in Italy. And Galileo Galilei, amongst many other scientific findings, says the world is round. And at that point, the consciousness was that the world is flat and the Roman Empire is at the center of it. So he was persecuted for scientific inquiry, for saying that the world is round. And today, 2 centuries later, I think there's absolute consensus the world is round. You can go this way via America and only come back from the Australian side. If the world was flat, you would never be able to do that. So we welcome our dear stakeholders' submissions. They don't have to come from our departure point. What if our departure point is fundamentally flawed and wrong? So stakeholders must feel free to really engage with the proposal of the CPA amendment, which seeks to tighten. It was the initiative of the executive, my DMs, and we welcomed it as a committee, we received it as parliament, and we thought we should seek their views. We have received quite a wide range of views. I remember saying to one gentleman, the way you are forcing your rejection, you're not making it that ultimately the lawmakers buy into it, and at a certain point, because at the end it's the committee that votes on the bill. So useful persuasion helps, because you want to convince committee members that, hey, there might be dangers there. you know. So this gentleman in Bronkhorstspruit, we reject this, and it was very vehement. That's his opinion, he's entitled to it. We hope it's recorded and has been captured, but so far, throughout the country, I picked up, through my own listening, only one outright rejection. Right. So I think I've opened the way for the purpose of today. Beyond today, for our stakeholders, for the public out there who might be keen to follow the processes, CPAs are, because we talk jargon all the time and people want to listen on radio or on TV and cannot follow what we're talking about. Communal property associations, right. So beyond today, there will then be a much more stronger legal process of the committee. I do not know, under apologies, if I always insist, because at the end, all laws may be subject to legal scrutiny. I always insist that we be armed with our legal team all the time when we do legislation. I don't know, I'm just going to take apologies. There might be an apology on behalf of the legal section. But also to the department, HOD, also to the department, there might be none near Monshan. You are disturbing the meeting. Can you be called to order then? Yeah. Sorry if you didn't do your groundwork, but this can no longer be the time. This can no longer be the time. So Cynthia, I'm just going to confine you to your chair or check what other powers the chair has. Yeah. I know they might be trying to look at important logistics to help us, but I'm sorry about that, yeah. Sometimes the connectivity of the audiovisuals and all those, yeah. Thank you, compatibility and all. So, shall we then, I think other issues shall emerge as we proceed, if I omitted anything, but it was very, very important to foreground this session. Remember, it's held in public, so we must really try our best. I like to emphasize, dear stakeholders, dear department, the judgment on Doctors for Life and the judgment on Matatiel. I've had a privilege, I was involved in Matatiel hearings and processes. It was quite a rough one. The Concord, in unreliably advised legally, so that the Concord found that legislators omitted to engage in public education. So, excuse me, at any other point that you feel it's an obvious point, but I still emphasize a certain point. It's such that we want to close. We can't take embarrassment that all the time there's no public education. If someone speaks outside one of the parameters of this or the constitution, then there's got to be an element. Your point, Dr. Horn, in relation to constitution, what clause, how do you align those? So the session is interactive as much as possible. That's my point. It's not a passive process where you could go to a pigeonhole, like when you submit tender, go to a pigeonhole, make your submission, then your horn will remain and decide. That's not it at all. It's an interactive process. We seek to understand each other, the departure points, and we then seek to find sense and what's good for our people generally. I am emphasizing the Doctors for Life and the Matatiel case. I was really highly schooled about the shortcomings there, and that's why those legislations went against Parliament. Yeah. The apologies will now be taken. I will then give the committee secretary to, but there's a hand up, I'll come back to conversation. Honourable Walter.
Chair, I will have to leave just before 12 for a foreign delegation that wants to meet with me. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable DM.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. We will request to be released at 11:30 for the cabinet committee.
That means the ministerial component. That's not on behalf of the department, and hope that the department will to the best of their ability, carry your spirit. Yeah. Right. Any other apology? Thank you. Okay, let's take the conversation.
Thank you, Chair. I've got an apology from MP Filtani. He's busy with another committee. I've got an apology from the Minister. He's at the NSOP today. They're sending an apology for the chaplain which is on Saturday. Thank you very much.
We oh yeah, I don't know how I omitted also that of the chair, but thank you, County Secretary. Yeah, the chair is on a leave of absence for study purposes. So those are the apologies we note. Honourable Walters, please represent us well. I've been exposed to international work with your colleague Honourable Walters, and it's a very useful area of work. So please, all the best to your commitment at. At half 12 months, man. They may just wait for you for 20 minutes. Thank you. We note all the apologies and record them as such. In terms of now the presentations, we will allow, plus, has not received the register back of the stakeholder, so it's plus, though I've been advised that it's plus who's been here. I mean, who are here physically. I am aware that other stakeholders did submit in writing, but could not find the privilege to come and talk to their submissions. They were afforded, now I just want to record that, they were afforded an opportunity between even last week, and unfortunately times could not permit on their part, and now. So that at any point it should be recorded that at any point we remained open to all. There was a very, very long list, committee secretary, I remember checking with me, a two-pager of stakeholder, each line stakeholder, a two-pager, one-and-a-half-pager. So we did all that. I just want to confirm the meeting and to confirm the record. There was a due process followed the best possible. So we accept that stakeholders opted to submit in writing and not talk to their submission, and but thanks to PLUS who made it possible to be available to talk to the submission. So what we will do, there's an item about minutes. The House started in the morning yesterday, so we didn't have time for management meeting and all that, because I just wanted to propose that the item on the adoption of minutes be deferred to the chair, to the regular chair. But let me just hear the comments on that. Because, yeah, it's the chair's item, I'm just helping her to coordinate this meeting.
Thank you.
With concurrence with our management team, we defer the item on minutes. It's going to help with the timelines that people were having, so that we'll defer the item and then we'll take minutes with the other minutes at the following fitting. Right. So we really on the two submissions now. We'll ask a plus to meet and greet us. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for this opportunity to address the committee. I'm very much excited to be here, and I'm even more excited by the fact that the acting chairperson is Mr. Mngoni, which happens to be my clan name. So I'm Kanyiso Kumede from PLUS. I'm with my colleague here, Professor Ruth Hall, and I'll be presenting on behalf of my organization, which is the Institute for Poverty, Land and Agrarian Studies. We are based at the University of the Western Cape, and we are under the Faculty of Economic and Management Sciences. At PLAS, we engage in research, training, policy development, and advocacy on issues that relate to land, agrarian reform, rural governance, natural resource management. I must say that when we read the bill, there are some aspects of the bill that we see to be a positive development. For instance, where the bill indicates that the state will invest more financial and institutional resources in supporting CPAs. We welcome that. However, we are opposed to the proposal, which seeks to weaken the powers of the CPAs by transferring ownership from the CPAs to the communities. But I will explain more as I go further. But maybe before I start, let us look at the original intent of the CPA Act of 1996. The Act was aimed at providing a new form of a legal entity through which people could own land democratically. This means that after land had been returned to the people and people decided that they wanted to own land as a group, this legal entity called the CPA was created specifically for that. Because in the past, we remember that the other forms such as trusts, but the CPAs were created specifically for the purpose so that these groups are able to own land. And after the transfer of the title, the CPAs would own land and will be represented by the committee members, which they elect, who then govern the land in terms of democratic principles that are laid out in the agreed constitution. And I must also say that this CPA model actually draws from the work of a Professor Oket Ogondo, who advocated for a shift from the trusteeship model, where the land will be held on behalf of the people by a certain entity, to a model where people are able to own land themselves as CPAs. The bill proposes that there should be an establishment of the CPA office and the register. We welcome that, but we feel that if you look at the functions of the register in the bill, they are a bit vague. For instance, it is said in Section 2DA that the registrar shall provide assistance to communities and associations, but it does not necessarily state the exact form of assistance. My assumption is that since there has been interaction with CPAs, we would know by now what sort of assistance that the communities are looking for. But however, I must say that we accept the development of this office because we know that when the office is there, then the CPAs will be able to be assisted more. We also welcome the removal of the provisional CPAs, which we believe that they have been some sort of a way of delaying the transfer of the property rights to the communities. So our argument is that all CPAs should be properly registered and rights transferred to them. However, this is where we differ, where the bill proposes that the ownership of the land or the property shall now be transferred to the communities. We think that it's not something that has to be done. I'll explain why. It's simply because in some communities, you'd find that within a community, there are members who are members of the CPA. But within the very same community, there are those who are not members. of the CPA. Those who happen to be the members of the association, it's usually those who are land reform beneficiaries. Let me give you an example, for instance. At Lambeth, there were people within the very same village who were removed from one part of the village to another. And in 1996, they lodged their claim, and then it was awarded. So what has happened now, they form part of this new committee, of this community. And within this community now, you've got those who are affected by the fourth removal and those who are not affected, by the fourth removal. So now what does this mean? If you say that now you are taking away the ownership rights from the CPAs to the communities, what we are implying here is that now the CPAs, because you must remember, the CPAs, they have got a list of beneficiaries. And this list of beneficiaries only contains those who are affected by those laws that removed them from wherever where they stay. So now when you say, the bill says that now the ownership shall be transferred to the community, to the communities, this implies that now you'll be including even people who are not part of the forced removal. So that is our point of departure. This is our point of departure. So that is why we say that we are against this transfer of ownership. If you look at the definition of the community, this is the very same definition that is used in the Communal Land Tenure Bill, where it defines the communities that are found in the former homelands. And in those communities, you find that they are administered by the traditional councils, administered by chiefs through traditional councils. So now, when you say that you are transferring ownership from CPAs to communities, this then implies that the ownership will be transferred from the CPA members to the communities, which include members who are not necessarily the beneficiaries. We also have a question that since now there's this proposal by the department that the ownership shall no longer vest with the CPAs, what will happen to the status of the current CPAs? Because we know that there are CPAs that have held land on behalf of its members. What will happen? Does this not amount to the expropriation of their property rights? Because currently, as CPAs, they own land, and now we are proposing that we shall transfer ownership to the community. And another provision which we tend to disagree with is the extension of the provisions of the bill to the labor tenants. Labor tenants have always held land and they've always formed CPAs. But what is different from what is being proposed now is that those CPAs who currently, CPAs formed by labor tenants, who currently have ownership rights, if we say that now the CPAs will no longer hold land or will no longer have ownership rights, what are we saying to these CPAs, to these labor tenants? Are we not degrading their land ownership rights? We are. Because you know that the labor tenants are also covered in the Labor Tenants Act, which also advocates for the upgrading of their rights from being tenants to owners. So what are we saying when we say now this provision must also extend to them? We are basically going to be degrading their land rights. So that is why we are against this this provision, which seeks to extend CPAs to the labor tenants. Because the argument is that they've always formed CPAs, and they were then under the control of the CPA Act.
if they form a CPS. The bill also proposes or gives extended power to the state as it regards the two decision making about the community properties. We believe that it might be an attempt to create more mechanisms for accountability and all that. But we believe that this is an unfair process because you've got communities here who are represented by their committee members whom they elect. And now you are saying that the community can take decisions, but those decisions will be subject to the state, will be subject to the consent that will have to be granted by the state. This simply means that the ownership rights that we give even to the communities, if I were to use that a term that is used in the bill, it will simply mean that this will be equal to nominal ownership. Ownership that does not mean anything. If you own something, you also would like to have decision over it. But I know that that might be an attempt to protect the CPA, as we know that some CPA committee members have been engaging in activities that have resulted in some of the members not being satisfied. But we believe that there should be other methods that should be adopted that will ensure that proper procedures are followed when they need to sell a particular asset. But to say that the CPAs no longer have decision making powers. And the decision that they take will always be subject to the state. It's not a fair process, because my understanding is that the issue here is to ensure that these groups have ownership rights, they're able to take decisions so that they are able to sustain themselves. Another provision that we are against is that of the introduction of a general plan. You see, in section 2A, 2A1 of the bill, it is said that the department shall have a general plan for such property prepared and approved. Out of this general plan, in the bill, it is not mentioned in any way in the issue of public participation. Let me just tell you a short story about myself. I am from a village in Hammersmith. It is called the Zibusa village. We used to be a communal area, though our chief did not stay with us, but we knew that we had a chief that had authority over us. So when the democratic dispensation came through, they came and told us that there's going to be development and all that, but it was not explained to us exactly how it was going to be. Today we have, people used to produce crops, we used to have cattle and all that, then we promised development. It came, we were all happy, but what has happened now, we've got this RDP settlement where people are unable now to sustain themselves through crop production, and because there's simply no space. That's exactly what I was complaining about when I was at home last month. Because now my mom's got this tiny garden. It was simply because of the introduction of this general plan, which does not provide for public participation. But if we were to look at the communal land bill, at least today, there is a provision for public participation, though I have some reservations with the bill, but at least it provides for the public participation. And also some of the experts in terms of planning have argued that this is a very expensive exercise. And also if you introduce a plan in the communal area, it's also a rigid framework that is very difficult to shift around as per needs. of the people, because it will define what people should use the island for. Why must it be dictated to the people how they must use the island for? So these are some of the recommendations that we have. Firstly, we suggest that the bill is not passed in its current form. And another thing that we are calling for is a public debate on issue whether black people should be allowed to receive land with full ownership rights. But most importantly, I'd argue that we need more public participation. If you look at the submission by Nkunzi Development Association, you can see that I understand that maybe it might be the limitation of the resources and all that, but they argue that most of the CPAs that they work with did not form part of the consultations. Because if you exclude the very important stakeholders who are CPA members, then the process, it becomes even difficult, because at some stage we will be expected to effect these proposed developments. But now people in the ground will not accept them. No, that will be all. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Plus additions, Prof? Or you.
Okay. Since you're giving me the floor,
you can switch off there.
Thank you so much. I think that Nkanyiso has given a very, very comprehensive overview of the bill. I think that one of the main things that in our discussions among all the members of staff, we have thought we can't look at the CPA amendment bill in isolation. We have to look at it in relation to the communal land tenure bill and to the traditional and Khoisan leadership bill. Now, one of the key issues that we are concerned about, as Nkanyiso very, very adequately explained, is the question of what is the community other than the CPA? The whole point of the CPA Act in 1996 was to allow communities to own, hold, and manage their land together, jointly, in terms of a democratic constitution. Now, this amendment bill says that CPAs will not own, they will not hold, but they must manage and administer. And this raises the question of, if you say the community holds, well, what is the community if it is not a formally recognized legal entity? A community that is a formally recognized legal entity is a CPA or a trust. So we actually are in a situation where we understand this bill as signifying that when we say the community owns, we are actually talking about state trusteeship. And that actually we're saying that CPAs will no longer own the land. They must manage and administer it, but not own it. And I think that what Nkanyiso has suggested is that we see this as a dilution of people's land rights. And I think that if anyone was up yesterday evening watching Channel 408 and the release of the high-level panel, there were serious concerns about the degree to which we have enabled ordinary people to hold and manage their own land democratically. So those are some of the issues that we wanted to raise. So what does it actually mean for a community to own land, but a CPA to hold it, to manage and administer it? A community is not a legal entity. It cannot own land. So the only way in which we understand this as owning is that the state owns on your behalf. And that means that we're going back to the old model of the Bantustan, which says the state will own on your behalf, rather than people will have a right to choose. And so essentially one of our major concerns is the question of the right to choose.
Thanks. You are not called professor just for nothing, going. Supreme Court professor because you're posing a very, very difficult question. You would follow the line of the Galileo Galilei. thank you very much, Prof, for the addition on a serious note. Thank you. So I was just taking, Honourable Walter, I was just taking the additions from the body that was making the submission, right? And I think we got that. I just want to clarify once again, or to satisfy ourselves once again, there's no other stakeholder in attendance to make to talk. I've been briefed so, but I just want to satisfy myself. Thank you. Okay. All right. Except the department. Honourable Walter, I'm not sure what your point would be.
Chair, I think, we're obviously not at the stage yet where we debate the building itself and going through the various steps, where I think a lot of these remarks are going to be, I think we need to note it down and seriously scrutinise the legislation based on that, because I think it does raise the issue of legislation being drafted within silos. You know, the kind of environment where there's flawed legislation that's not working, but we try to incrementally improve it without looking at the entire legislative space holistically. So I don't think anyone is criticising the efforts made by this committee to solicit public participation. But if you solicit public participation within the framework of a, call it a silo with perimeters are set within a bit of legislation and people respond to that framework, we might miss the holistic picture, the other legislation that's been referred to. And I think also in this regard, what I find of concern, Section 25 of the Constitution in terms of property rights, certainly my understanding was not, you know, it wasn't an evil conspiracy to protect the property rights of the rich. It's actually to avoid the experience of apartheid where the state can expropriate land and trample on the property rights of people. It's actually there to protect the little guy. And I think that this is something we need to also consider when looking at this legislation, which I think part of the presentation that found resonance with me. And then I think another aspect when we come to the looking at the legislation is, and maybe my terminology, I hope it doesn't sow confusion, but it's maybe my own academic training coming into play, there's an operational space that is missing in terms of the legislation. Practically what happens within the CPAs, apart from the space where property rights are getting diluted, how do we avoid the problem that continuously come into the conversations about CPA where the department has to get involved in group management because of a lack of clear operational clarity within these CPAs? And I think there's an element that we referred to as well in the conversations about CPAs where the department in a sense ends up drifting into something which is not its core function, and that is actually mediation and, you know, trying to resolve something which is operation and functionally not working very well. So I'm not suggesting we debate it right at this stage, and that it might be more appropriate as we get closer to the legislation. But there's those three aspects that come out and speak to me that I think we need to very, very seriously apply to the, call it the goggles through which we're going to be looking at this legislation. Thanks.
Thank you so much. I did allow Honourable Walter to make a preliminary reflection because you might ask to what's the term? Step aside. You might ask to step aside. So I thought we needed the wisdom of that reflection. But ordinarily, in terms of the meeting, the procedure is going to be that I hope Honourable Robertson and your colleagues, some of the points, when some discussion and engagement flows, they will still be able, Honourable Walter, to carry them through. The procedure will be that we will then take the department not only to respond to or interact with FLA, but also other submissions that we know you received in writing. Mm-hmm. So shall we give you the space and time? Honorable DM Squatcha, I think at the point at which the call of duty on our department strikes, you will then, so yeah. I call that gentleman Rama, and I don't know if he has met the boy Ramatun Patel at Kaiser Chiefs, who's affectionately called the Rama.
Yeah.
He is Advocate Ramasala from the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. He doesn't play right back, he plays legal center.
Thank you, honorable members. We will make our presentation in terms of some of the presentations that we made regarding the bill. But I think even as we do that, what we're doing is providing clarity of those clauses in the bill, the ones where issues have been raised. So we will provide it from a purely objective viewpoint of the clarity and the reasoning of why we have included those in the bill at this point in time. And I'll hand over to Advocate
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know you
didn't like me calling you Rama earlier because you were worried about the CPA, Rama CPA in Swami. No, it's the other Rama. It's a good one.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members and our DMs and colleagues. I think it's important to start by trying to respond to the class admission, because it was strongly made, and later we will deal with the rest of the submissions that exist. Indeed, the class admission is one of the submissions that we did anyway, so it's more towards the end of our document, but I think it's more to start with it before we get to the other positions. I had the benefit of giving it some kind of pre-conference discussion with Mr. Gmet before the meeting started. And the because you see the submissions are based on some misunderstanding, I think, of what the bill provides for. If you look at the provisions of the bill, there is no way.
Before that, I need to take someone to talk on the legal of Parliament, because we are legal guys now, we're talking to unprotected people. You know, in a court of law, you won't be allowed to talk to us non-legal people. Let's just register that. Unless if I omitted, unless if I forgot. Did someone talk about the legal section of Parliament? Yeah, I'm advised that Advocate Ramasala. I'm advised that your counterpart should join in when the committee takes the process further. Ordinarily on my own, anything related to a bill, they should be there all the time. I'm biased because of my previous life as legislature. There was always a legal arm, so that as you talk, you know, the legal point can connect, you know, yeah. But we hope you'll be able to repeat this requirement next week when the legal section of Parliament is in attendance. But if they, sorry to disrupt, but I just wanted to, because I think it was a very, very crucial one. Thanks, over to you again to continue.
Thanks. I think the issues are not necessarily too legalistic. I think we'll try to explain in such a way that they make sense. I was saying that the premise from which class moves is that the bill seeks to transfer property from a CPA to what Prof calls state trusteeship, which suggests expropriation in it and a number of other things that conclude from that country. I was saying that if you read the bill clearly, there is no way where we are suggesting transfer of property from a TPA to anybody, whether it be a community or any other thing that is in the bill. If you look at the long title, the bill, there is no way where reference is made to transfer of property from a TPA to a community. The impression created stems from clause 7 of the bill, which is the clause that, I think it's clause 8, that is the bill that amends the part where we say the TPA holds property, and then we say it administers and manages a property. That is the impression that gave rise to the view that is being thrown held by class that we are suggesting transfer property. That is not the case. I'm trying to follow on that argument and try to, because you see they say that conclusion is based on the fact that the definition of community, which we are trying to make it clear in the bill, that holds it must be around that whole property. They say a community is a community as understood in the context of communal settings, like communal land in a bill. Now, that is not correct. The community is defined in the act. It is still defined in the bill. Now, if you look at the definition of community in the bill, it's just an amendment of the existing definition which has always been in the act. The only change we have made in that definition is to insert the labor tenant component of it. But if you look at that definition, it is clear that it is not a community in the sense of a community in the communal engineer field. The reason being that if you look at that definition, it talks about a person or group of persons, including labor tenants, whose rights to a particular property are determined by shared rules under a written constitution. Now, if you take into account that we emphasize under a written constitution, this tells you that we're talking about a community which is the beneficiaries as and business in terms of CPA. Now, the community in the context of communal land tenure, they are not governed by constitution. There is no requirement anywhere that for the community to exist in a communal setting, in a normal traditional setting, there has to be a constitution. Now, the difference here is telling. It shows you that we are speaking to a community as understood in the sense of it being governed by a constitution. Now, if you look at the items in the schedule to the Act, that tells you what are the issues that must be in the Constitution. Item 5 tells you that the beneficiaries must be identified, either by name or identity number, or by some kind of a principle in terms of who qualifies to be a member. Like I'm saying, there is no intention to transfer land from a CPA to a broader community which is not understood to be the beneficiary. And I'm saying that because if you look at the definition of community, it still speaks to a community that is governed by a constitution, which is a CPA community, not a broader community. So if that is understood, then I think it will be clear that the premise from which class is moving is different from ours in terms of understanding. And I thought it was important to highlight that. Now, if that is understood, then you will see that the conclusions that are drawn in relation to state trusteeship of property, that the property now moves from a CPA to being owned by the state on behalf of communities, and also making the deductions that if you look at the submission, that we are reverting to the apartheid days where blacks were not allowed to own property because they were deemed to be incapable. Far from that, we will be the last, I think, person to try and do that. And the same applies to the conclusion of expropriation. It does not arise in the circumstances because there is no transfer of property from any individual to the state. And also the submissions made in
the hand of Mr. Komete Advocate Ramasana. What we're going to do is I will ask that class would be noted. We will still open up for a further round of engagement, right? So just carefully take down some notes. We'll, in the process, we'll also rope in the committee to seek clarity and to engage. So it's that kind of interaction. I'm sorry, you didn't see, but I saw the hand. Thank the advocate.
Thank you, Chair. The response is a mission mechanism to labor tenants. And the objections raised in relation that still go back to the definition of community in the context which they are intended to mean, extended people beyond beneficiaries. As I said, that is not the intention of the bill. The community still remain people defined or listed in the constitution of the CPA, which is the beneficiary in the main. Now, as we were having our pre-conference a discussion with Mr. Gmede, I was trying to explain to him that maybe there is some kind of confusion, but the idea, what we are trying to achieve with this amendment in relation to this particular issue, is simply to address a situation where over the years you have had a situation where CPA committee members have regarded themselves as just the beneficiary in the main. Committee members were responsible for the day-to-day affairs of the CPA. Those who are responsible for transacting on behalf of the CPA, they have over the years assumed the role of being the owner and transact with the property as if it is a property. During the public hearings, we have had so many complaints by CPA members themselves that decisions have been made without consulting them. Decisions have been made without actually involving them. In some instances, properties have been sold without them being aware of it. And also, suddenly they see a new owner coming to them and say, I'm the owner. Now, what we are seeking to do in the bill is to make it clear that the CPA as a legal entity cannot be the owner on its own. It is not the owner for itself. It holds property for the members. It holds property for CPA members, for the community. If the community is understood, as I've been trying to explain, to mean beneficiaries, that's the distinction. If we look at the example that Prof made of a trust, for instance, if you look at a trust, you have a trust, which is the legal entity. Then you have a trustee, who are the persons who are responsible for the day-to-day transactions for the trust. They are not the owners of the property if the trust owns property. The property will be owned by the beneficiary of the trust. So in other words, the owner are the beneficiary, not the official in the sense of trustee who transacts on the day-to-day basis on behalf of the trust. That's the distinction we're trying to draw. That simply we are making it clear that the CPA as a legal entity is not the owner. And it has not been the owner even from the inception of this piece of legislation in 1996.
As you're still there, I don't want it to even go on a discussion this clarity. So you have nothing called executive. You have nothing. So for you, CPA means the committee.
A CPA is an association. It's defined in the Act as an association.
As an association.
Yes.
Inclusive of all members.
Of all members. Which is loosely, it's the beneficiary state.
Yeah.
So the members are the, now that is the challenge that we have. in the current legislation, that you make a legal entity the owner instead of the real owner, who's the beneficiary in this instance. Now, because the legal entity has been abusing its powers in the past, and it's understandable because from 1997, that having been the case, it's difficult to move out of that conception of being introspective. Because this has been the case, it always seems to be the case that if you say they can only do the actual function, which is to administer as officials, then that amounts to expropriation. It can be.
Okay. No, let's proceed. I think you have fairly canvassed the point. I can assure you, you have been well ahead, whether agreeing or not agreeing, then the discussion will join in.
Yeah, no, the other issues the clerk raised relate to the powers of the minister in terms of the bill, which you will see, I think, in I think it's section 12, where we are proposing the bill that if the commission is going to be disposing of land, like I'm stating that, the minister must consent to that sale of property. It is. I understand that it is seen as some kind of overreaching or giving the minister wider power. We have explained in our submission that remember this property that in the first instance was obtained at the expense of the department. The department paid, or the state paid for that land. Now, if the CPA is going to be disposing of that land, it's only fair that land must first be given to the Department of Health and Function. We are not saying that land reverts to the state. We are not saying that land is obstructed by the state. What we are saying, if the committee is going to be selling that land, for instance, maybe the amount to sell it to the person to whom it was bought in the first instance, maybe. We are saying the state must be given a license to buy and then redistribute accordingly. That's the appeal I think we're making. With regard to labor tenants, I think Mr. Gumede correctly pointed out that even before the amendments are being proposed, labor tenants can form CPAs. We don't deny that. We are simply saying this is they are not compelled to form CPAs. It's an option that they're given that if they so wish, they can form a CPA. If you look at the provisions of Clause 2 that deals with the application of the Act, In all the instances where CPAs are formed, you will see there is an overriding clause, I think it's clause 26, that says that the decision by the minister to direct that they be a CPA must be informed firstly by a resolution by the community itself to have decided that one is a CPA. So it's not something that will come from the state that we should form a CPA. The other point they made in relation to general plan, I think it's acknowledged that this provision is going to place a burden on the state in terms of requiring that they be planned. We have a situation where government is encouraging a special planning in relation to land management and use in general. Now, our view is that you cannot be leaving so-called similar areas behind. Now, honorable members will be aware that our communal areas are developing rapidly. You have malls that are being developed in our communal areas. You have towns that have been developed in communal areas. Now, we can't be saying that because these are communal areas, we can't have planning. I mean, we will be, in my view, leaving them behind in terms of development. Rather, what we say, if the provision appear as if development of plans is a precondition for transfer, then we would say, not make it a precondition, but still require that they should be planned for each and every property that is being developed. And maybe that all of part of it maybe will be taken care of. But they should be planned. We can't have a situation where we say we are planning in terms of certain areas of the country, we are planning with regard to certain areas we're not going to be planning. In Amman 12, the Chebu zone, there is a town developing communal area. In the Palale, Mafugain, those are communal areas where towns are developing from communal areas. And the planning is very much encouraged. Those are the class submissions in the main. So I don't know whether I can go to for the rest, or maybe wait for them.
I did not point at Honourable Chalabek. You are asking the question. The question you are asking is whether you should proceed with the other interactions or perhaps hold it at this, and then we convert these points roughly to get an understanding, and then we proceed to other. I want to suggest from the chair that we give some space, because the 12 members want to also engage before there's so much on the plate. Maybe we engage, but also so as to allow class to be able to be excused at any point that they would wish to be excused after we have so they may have the privilege that they are here, then so that when we deal with others, I know there will be points in common with others as well, but when we deal with others, class would have liberty whether to remain or to be excused, or part remaining, part excused. That's what we will do. So I will now allow hands to. You see why I said that? Okay, let me just not go to this. I just want to request members, let's not micromanage. You know, sometimes I'm given notes here, so there are certain issues about which I have insight. So when I propose a certain direction, sometimes I'm informed by certain things. So, but let's really keep eyes on the ball. The ball is, what is the most appropriate dispensation for our people pertaining to this area covered? There are about four or five key issues. And then we roughly canvass that. We don't take resolutions necessarily. I would insist to committee support that legal should have been here. I would definitely insist and regret that legal is not here. Even when I sit there, I would still insist. So colleagues in committee support, please make sure that legal is there all the time. Why? Let me give you an example. A definition of a community is there, the principal act is there in the new act. Now, what will happen in the room is general theoretical analysis of the concept. Now, the legal must then draw wisdom from what seems to be emerging and then advise appropriately. If legal thinks they will come next week to tell us a list, they're there replaced by, that's not what legal is all about, you know. Legal must follow our line of thought, the line of thought of the current, of the stakeholders and all. So it's highly regrettable that legal is not here. I've made a point before, that's why I feel strongly. I've made a point before that legal must always be there. Because there are legal points now. How do I engage Advocate Ramasala when it defines the community? When I have the principal act with a certain definition, and then because then it becomes legal, and without the legal section of parliament, I just think that I'll be narrating the story for a third time, and I'm not going to do it, about why legal is important. When we went to defend ourselves in court, we have not assaulted anyone. The magistrate said, gentlemen, I advise you, get legal support. Honourable members, I want to note hands to interact. Honourable Babama, Honourable Robertson, Honourable Walker, Honourable Madela, those are the hands who have noted. Thank you.
Yes.
Alternatively, members, if you don't mind, because I know we have kept you quiet for a long time, and I want to unleash you, but it makes certain interactive mode for PLUS who kickstarted, department responded for PLUS to say, but this is what we meant, or this is not what we meant. So, honorable members, then you would have a better entry point from there. I really request you to be patient just a little bit. So PLAT has got one or two persons only to speak anyway. Yeah.
Okay, no, thank you very much. I'd like to respond to what Advocate has just said. If you look at the Principal Act, it acknowledges that there's a difference between the CPA and the community. The CPA will be made up of its members, and these members appear in a list or a register. But these CPA members may live in communities where there are people who are not necessarily the members of the CPA. So that is why they made that distinction. So now, with the new bill, it proposes that the ownership rights shall be transferred to the community, whereas CPA, or Communal Property Association, it does not only include the committee members of the CPA, as he says, but it also includes the members, the people who are members of the CPA itself. And the advocate seems to be saying that the CPA necessarily speaks to the committee members of the CPA. But the committee members of the CPA are members of the CPA that are elected by the CPA members. So that is why the Principal Act made that distinction. If you look at other pieces of legislation, for instance, I talked earlier on about the Communal Land Tenure Bill. It says that the ownership will be transferred from government to communities. And that when they speak of communities there, they're speaking of the communities that are found in the communal area. And most of these communities are not necessarily CPAs. So what we are saying here, we say CPAs shall administer, manage land in the communal areas, which seems to be problematic, because I don't see a traditional council, for instance, agreeing to that now the land shall be administered by the CPAs. It's not going to happen, because the CPAs are supposed to be, the CPA committees, for instance, who will govern land on behalf of the members, are always appointed by its members. They are elected. And now we've got traditional councils. So now when you say you're transferring ownership to the communities, then you are starting a chaos there. Because the CPA members themselves will not want to include those who are non-members. We know what has happened to the CPAs, where people who are not members have been included to the CPAs so that they meet the expected requirements for them to register as CPAs. There are conflicts. So now when we say now we are taking ownership from the CPAs to the communities, it's a recipe for a disaster. So that is why we are saying that we reject that. Because it creates the impression that now you are taking the power from the CPAs, who may be independent from the community. It is true that it may be the community members who stay within the very same community, but the CPAs are independent. As I've told you, at Lambeth, there is a community which has a traditional council which represents it. Which are the traditional council that represents it, but still you've got a CPA that is independent of, and there's the anonymity there, because of that, there's anonymity because the chief is actually against the CPA administering land that does not necessarily belong to the community. So this will be a recipe for design. In the issue of expropriation, we know that the Communal Land Tenure Bill gives communities an option to choose between traditional councils, the CPAs, and other entities. But what we are saying here is that now when you take the ownership from CPAs, it is likely that that ownership, if you say it should be under the communities, it is likely that that ownership shall rest with the traditional council. And we know that the legal standing currently of those traditional councils is found to be wanting currently. Hence the traditional coalition and leadership game, which is giving them a year to transform. So what exactly are we saying to the people? Let me move to the issue where he was talking about labor talents. You see, labor talents have had their rights upgraded to ownership. And the current proposition is that CPAs will no longer own land. They will only administer and manage. Now the question is, where will this ownership land? Where is it going to rest, the ownership, in case of the labor tenants? So those are some of our concerns. And Professor Horn will respond on the issue of the powers of the minister and the general plan. Thank you very much.
Ngiyabonga wemngoni indaba angifuni kuloo mhlingoni kakhulu ngoba then the public out there will say hey, there's nepotism, one mnguni co-opting the other and one mnguni agreeing with the other. Thank you very much. You know prof about clan names, so he is mnguni.
Yes.
Yeah, you are going to be Faku, you prof, because you're a clan name, you are Faku.
Okay, I'm good with that. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I will be brief. Firstly, I want to say I hope that we all saw the high-level panel releasing its report last night. It was in the Santa Convention Center with all the speakers forum present. And one of the key issues that this panel chaired by former President Motlanthe has said is that it is not acceptable for Parliament to pass legislation that relates to key issues that the panel has made recommendations on. So this is one key issue. And in fact, if you read the full report and even the executive summary of the higher level panel report, it specifically asks Parliament to hold back from passing legislation that relates to the key areas in which it's made recommendations, including land reform, including the regulation and allocation of land under CPAs. Firstly, I'd like to say in response to the advocates...
Sorry, did they include the restitution in your knowledge? I missed it, definitely. Did they include the restitution?
Yes, they did. And they talked about the July deadline for new legislation. There are two documents, and maybe it would be useful to circulate in the committee because these reports only came out last night. But I think that they are very important for the committee. Firstly, I'd like to say to the advocates, one of the things that we could not clarify, reading the document, reading the bill, we couldn't clarify whether or not it's retrospective. In other words, does it apply
to... I'm sorry to keep on stepping here. Earlier on when I said I didn't recognize Orange and Chabalenge, he was raising a concern that you were conferring while you were being responded to. Now as you are responding, your colleagues on the other side are now conferring. But before that, he was also conferring with Orange Martin. So I just want to appeal to everyone in the meeting. Let's minimize the conferring. There are interesting points. People want to compare notes, to check, but let's just try and keep it. Because we'll talk past each other, because when you're speaking, they get a chance to clarify their position. And when they were speaking, you got a chance with Umguni to clarify your position. And at some point, when I was about to point hands, Honorable Mandela was clarifying with Honorable Chabalenge. So I'm just asking the whole nation, let's just keep the conferences to an absolute minimum. I know what the rule says. It doesn't say you cannot converse. It says don't converse loudly. That's what the rule says. But we also want each other's attention because we are a small meeting. Thank you, Prof.
Thank you so much. One of the things that was not clear from the bill, or the memorandum to the bill, was whether or not this bill is retrospective? In other words, does it apply to CCAs that are already established? Or does it only apply to new CCAs that are going to be established? And this is quite important, because we understand that if it were to apply retrospectively, it would amount to an illegal expropriation of property rights without compensation for the communities that hold land under CPAs. What we're understanding from the advocate now is that it should not be retrospective. That is not clear in the bill, but we think that that's a good thing. But the most important thing that we want to raise is that the bill proposes that one entity, in other words, the community, owns the land, but another entity transacts the land. And so we are raising serious questions about how it is that one group can own the land, but another entity transacts it. And we think that that is unconstitutional. And we fully expect that if this bill were to be passed in its present form, it will be challenged legally, it will go all the way to the Constitutional Court, and we will spend years, and possibly millions of rands, possibly wasted, in fighting this thing. So our question is, to the department and to its legal advisors, why should the CPA not hold property, given that the CPA as an entity was designed in precisely to hold property? So if it's not going to hold property, what is the point of the CPA? And how can a community, which is not a legally defined entity, how can a community own land and have that, its own land transacted by another entity? So we are seriously concerned that there are situations that could be made possible where community land is being transacted without the consent of communities, and that is our main concern. So the reason why we have raised these concerns is that we feel that what the subtext is of this bill is that actually the department is introducing legislation to say that under the communal land tenure bill, community land will be held nominally in the name of the community, but actually, once people have the right to choose, they can choose CPAs or traditional authorities. In reality, we expect traditional authorities or traditional councils to take control in much of the country, and they will de facto become the owners. And this means dispossessing people of their own land rights. Briefly, in terms of labour tenants, I just want to say that labour tenants, in terms of the 1996 Act, are entitled to claim the land that they hold. And Labour Tenants Act is a very powerful act. I think we've ignored it too much. It's pretty much like the Restitution Act. It's saying even though you haven't been totally forced off the land, you're still there, but with weak rights, but you should be able to claim that land and upgrade your rights to full ownership, right? And we know that it hasn't been adequately implemented. Of course, people are not compelled to form CPAs. They can form other legal entities. But the point is that they must have some kind of landholding entity. In terms of general plans, we understand that the kind of requirements around spatial planning are highly rigid. And I think that we need a bit of a reality check and to be very honest about the capacity of this department to implement its existing laws. And I think that Motlanthe's presentation last night really emphasized this, that we know that this is a department with limited capacity, an enormous mandate across the country, not only on land reform, but also rural development. We think that spatial planning imposes a very high level of rigidity that normally relates to urban areas, and now we're transposing it into rural areas. So we're concerned about that. But just to go back to the overall question is this amendment bill not actually undoing the 1996 Act, which is to say that communities are entitled to hold land together and to manage and administer it in terms of a democratic constitution together, and they're entitled to do that. And it seems that this bill is taking that right away. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Prof. Hall. I know the Deputy Chief would be here on admin matters with one or two of my honourable members. You are welcome. The honourable member... We are honored, Honorable Deputy Chief, with the Honorable GM is saying we are honored to have you even just to breathe the same air with you under this roof. Thank you. Even if it was just for your own administrative issues.
I joined the
committee. I'll have 5 minutes. Thank you very much, DCW. Honourable members, there were hands noted. Shall we then have a take in that order, please? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I have the greatest of respect for class, specifically the professor, having read a lot of books. Maybe the young man still needs to write a lot of books as well, so that he can actually get my respect. I also have a lot of respect for the advocate, Urama. Therefore, I feel that they differ because they're looking through different windows, but they're looking at the same thing. You know, your window could be blue, theirs could be red or whatever, but I think essentially we all want the same thing. It's just that it's got semantics in it. What do we mean by community? What do we mean by CPA, etc., etc., etc.? So I think us, as the homework that we have as the committee, is to actually, well, my homework is to go back to the bill and read it also in different, you know, looking at it from different windows myself. Because when one speaks, I tend to agree with them, and then when the other one speaks, I tend to agree with them. So really, I feel that we need to go back. It just means that there is a gap in the legislation. Because once legislation is open to different interpretations, then there's a problem with it. And I think, having said initially that I respect the both of you, you know, as people who really know what they're talking about, then I think that we need to go back and look at the legislation and try and close that gap. Thank you. That's what I was going to say.
Honourable,
I think I'm going to, thanks for the presentation, thanks to PLOS for the presentation. I think I'm going to withhold my questions as well until I've gone through the Act again, and as my astute colleague has indicated, look at it through both windows and get a good idea. I'm coming. Thank you.
Yeah, Honourable
Wallace. Chair, I think the issue's got very clearly highlighted here, and I think there is a concern that I have, and that is that we should be drafting legislation that is not going to need to be amended 2-3 years from now. The idea is to have legislation that permanently take the land reform space forward. So I think a couple of serious red flags, I'm not going to repeat what's been said already, got raised, and I do think very, very careful reflection should be given to the legislation that we're producing, what's happening elsewhere in legislation as well, and what the ultimate effect of that is going to be. It's ultimately, and I think we've raised it also with the private members bill that you're proposing as well, ultimately we need to come up with legislation that secure the rights, and from our perspective, of individuals as much as possible. The debate to that, of course, but if there's anything that is not clear, if anything that doesn't empower people, real people, with land rights, then we seriously need to push the pause button and reflect. Thanks.
The last one was out of the matter.
Thank you very much. I also wish to add my welcoming appreciation for the presentation table here, presented here this morning. I must be very careful, Chair. I've got an association with the presentation here, and I don't want to enable that relationship. But Chair, I think what has been said by my colleagues they are extremely arrogant, because I think the central thrust of the disagreement, if there is any, relates to defining community. In the sense of that, because the act is very clear, it speaks about restituted land. And for any land to be restituted, there have to be a very, very clear list of beneficiaries.
Yeah.
But the reality is also that when land has been restituted, there are sometimes those beneficiaries, they marry other people, there are other families or friends that come and live with them. So they constitute a community. I think this is a thrust of the concern of plants, that it would be, it could be broader than the people, the beneficiaries, advocate drama. Because here in the old definition, Chair, there is very, very clear a defining what a community is and relating to those, let me just read it, Chair. It says a community means a group of persons which wishes to have its rights to, or in particular, property determined by shared rules under a written constitution, and which wishes or is required to form an association. Now, the property means if they are the beneficiaries, they are the owners of the property. You know, and what I think this amendment seeks to do is to entrench that communal ownership, that property rights that doesn't belong only to the association that are formed, because in terms of the the mandate from the land court for restitution to form an association, you know, that association comes after, if one goes back, it comes after that land has been awarded to people who are owners of that land. So they have the right to form association to manage and hold their property on their behalf, and they elect among them people that in actual fact manages it, as Advocate Rama has been indicated. But the challenge is, as you pointed out, is that while the communities are being settled in the land that has been restituted to them, there are others that are joining them, and those others appropriate from time to time certain rights and becomes in actual fact also decision makers. Now, I think what we should do, Jay, and I would appeal to PLAS, is perhaps to look at a form of wording or definition that in actual fact merges those two things and prevent the non-beneficiaries from acquiring rights that should not belong, that they should not have in the first instance, because I think that is essentially what this amendment is trying to do. And you are absolutely right. There are conflicts around it, and I can cite a number of CPAs where there are accusations of in-laws that are now becoming owners and they are now chairpersons, etc. You know, but the ultimate reality is anyone that joins that CPA or that group of beneficiaries are doing it out of the consensus of the community there. They are invited by the very same community. You know, maybe a powerful chairperson wants to invite a good friend who are finding him or herself destitute. In essence, Chair, if you remember, there was an exhibit in one public hearing where it was said that the department official had brought somebody and to a CPA and said, this person must live with you because this person and his family have nowhere else to go. And that person, who is what we call an incomer, is now running the show there. You know, that I think that's what Clark trying to avoid, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Honorable Matena. I'm coming to Paraguay. Honorable Matene and Honorable Makasan.
Thank you very much. I do want to say anything first.
my colleagues here have said a mouthful, especially on the explanation of what is a community. One would say PLAS is defining community as per English when you say community, but according to a bill, when they say community, they've explained what is the meaning of the community. Now, there's no difference between the CPA and the community. The community is part of the CPA. The people who are beneficiaries in the CPA, maybe I'll go with what Honorable Madela has said, that the CPA to please go back and look at it, at the difference in the language used, and refer to the bill as it will confuse if you are looking at it other way around. But it clearly says, what is the community? It's the CPA. There's no difference between the two. Thank you, sir.
Excuse me, I'm covered. This is only what we were discussing in the presentation of the advocate on the plaque.
Thank you so much, Honorable. I'll start with DM and then I'll give you a power to.
No, thanks, Chairperson. I must say that it's quite an appreciated exchange, quite enlightening. I think that in the process of the exchange, we are also implying things that are never the intention. They can in no way, on the part of the department, be an intention to actually make people disown what rightfully belongs to them. I think Honorable Madela explained it very, very well. But it's not only the people who PLAS is worried about who are not the actual beneficiaries. What we also should be looking into is the issue of checks and balances. Even among those who are elected to lead the CPA, they themselves should not have a right of deciding without the consent. You see? Okay. Yes, yeah. Without the consent of the beneficiaries. And probably, as you say, when we begin to have that and see how we strengthen this. Because the issue is, in some instances, those people who become some executive of the CPA, in some instances, take decisions without the consent of the actual beneficiaries themselves. I mean, a case in point here we're dealing with here is here in Ndabeni. Prime land, which costs more than 300 million. The department intervened when some people who are an executive appointed by those people were selling it for 106 million and actually offering the actual beneficiaries that elected them 5,000 each. So I think these are the issues that is related to that. We should broadly look at into how we strengthen. There should be checks and balances. Accountability is also supposed to be key in what those people who are managing. That's why we must call it managing, because it can't be a matter of ownership of the few 20 people who have been elected by a particular community of beneficiaries.
No, thank you very much. Unfortunately, I beg to differ with Honorable Madela. Yes, the reason why I differ, if we say that the associate, that the CPA is same as the community, then why the transfer? Because if you look at the memorandum here, it explicitly says that the communal property will be owned by the community and the CPA shall transfer. So now, why move the ownership from the CPA to the community if they're the same thing? If we say they are the same thing, why move? Because now we've got CPAs that own land, then why?
if we are concerned with protecting other CPA members from the unaccountable committee members, we should be developing mechanisms towards that extent. But if we say that it's the same thing, it is not. Because in some communities, I'm sure we are all aware that the traditional councils coexist with CPAs. And that has resulted in conflict. So what do we say in that context, where there are CPAs and communities? What do we say if we say they are the same thing? We have communities and we have CPAs. CPAs are members of the committee. They don't only include the committee members and the Deputy Minister for Justice. They don't. The CPA members, it's a list of people who are there, and they decide that these are going to represent us. If we feel that these committee members have not been accountable, why not develop measures to hold them accountable so that they are able to control or own, to actually control the land in a manner that is convincing to the committee members. If we say it's the same thing, then why transfer from the CPA? Because it's a legal entity that can hold them. If we say they're the same, then why they transfer? Because here it's explicitly said that the community will own and the CPA shall transfer. Why? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much to the meeting. I think the points have been well conveyed. There's one issue that would still need to be slightly teased out. Yes.
Sorry to interrupt you. Unfortunately, I've got another presentation commitment, so I'd like to be excused.
That's in 15 minutes.
Okay.
Thank you. You know, colleagues, we come from different areas and backgrounds and so on. I just want to start from the basics. What is an idea? What is thought? Where does it belong? And unfortunately, due to the nature of societies, the ideas sometimes are private property. You talk about intellectual property. But an idea is a social construct in that it comes from society. I am raising this point so that I don't get to be too much aloof. I am raising this point to say, instead of us having sides, because once you own an idea, you know, once you own an idea and the other owns an idea, then this idea is mine. But if you put an idea there, you're a human being. You're here looking at an idea there. I think close to what Honorable Mbabama was saying, the idea is there. Then clearly it's easy to find each other because the person must be able to be defined outside, although it originated from a person or from the body, so that the idea can be engaged up until ultimately. But if it's if we become an idea in us, when an idea is ironed out, you will feel pain because it's like you're being attacked. But it's not the person being attacked, it's an idea for society. It emerged out of society. It's a product of society anyway. You yourself will then be belonging to society. So let's allow society to be able, generate an idea and then it becomes society's own. Whenever society shapes it this way or that way, I shouldn't feel the pain that my idea is being attacked. I'm just saying that to try and mitigate the kind of sides in the debate that could actually emerge. The next point that one would wish to highlight, it's not written in the phrasing, in the principal act or elsewhere. But we should all aspire to people holding the land rights fully. But experience elsewhere, close to Honorable DM's analogy, people own houses, RTP houses, then they sell them. I am short of saying people own RTP houses and they get repossessed. the context in which people should exercise these land rights and whatever other right, property rights, is also defined in an environment of the mode of production. Someone could find a better way to put it, because that hardcore classics now where I move from. The mode of production. In a capitalist society, then the system will take that land of the people, that 300 million worth piece of land. The people will be having all the good ideas with a development, with a plan done by Nguni Mandela consulting agents. We do a business plan for these people with all good intentions, really. We see them having a mall, having township, having street lights and all. Somewhere something goes wrong and the people are entirely dispossessed. Be it an individual, because the title deed to an RDP home in some towns, I studied the local government aspect in Durban under Dr. Makos Koza as well. She has talked through my head in academia. So we did the housing there. You know, the low-cost housing, cross-subsidized, I think it's called the Metro House, if I'm not confusing it with PE, because subsequently I went to the Eastern Bishop. Now, the Metro House, in fact, it can have a commercial value. It's nice. It can, there are one of them now in the small rural towns where there's no cross-subsidization, but in the Metro, it's cross-subsidized, it becomes kind of a three-room. That could be worth about 120,000 or so. Now, then this person has this full housing right, and the person thinks, hey, but economic activity, so that there's food, goes to the bank and puts it as a collateral or as a security, and then it's repossessed. So before we know it, all the intelligentsia in this room, 10 years, 20 years down the line, the land is back in the hands of the banks and big capital. I don't know if we've gone deep enough to that level of thought. So these rights, we need to exercise them, but in such a manner that we don't want to be dishing RDP houses as the state on the one hand, and then behind us is big capital busy repossessing them, and people are back in the street to homelessness and whatnot. That's peripheral, but it underlies some of the discourse in the room. I thought that perhaps colleagues, all of us, were not going that much deep enough. But insofar as the definition advocate run, I think we will still have a committee the next round, because you go with us all the way. Unfortunately, our stakeholders, they end most probably at this stage, but they can still forward other written submissions, better refining if they wish, all, including those that are not here. But we are with the department right through almost to the last day of adoption of the bill, it being sent for a second reading debate in the House and taken to NCOP. The definition, why you moved from, because colleagues, I just want to say, at public hearings, people really raised it. Rama, I think you were there. People really raised it at all public hearings. They really raised this issue about the community, the lines are kind of blurred, you know. It's just a question of legal formulation. If Oral Babama is correct, I think she is correct. It is just a question of looking at the same thing. So can we, in the drafting, those are the future processes of the committee, can we, in the drafting, make sure that we are talking about the beneficiaries? There's no alienation. Mm-hmm. Let's just be very clear in the drafting. That's for future meetings committee. Please, we're talking about the beneficiaries there. That's one part. The other, community, Uganiso is dead right. Like I say, in a community, in Palmerton, we call that after a missionary was Palmer, and the mission and the high school. But it's a rural area. So the community there is the community, all of us, the residents there. Reside in place of abode, but in the kind of domicilium, So that's the community. Now, but in the CPA, the community is supposed to be referring to this list of members, Ghanaians. But why did we change definitions, if that's the case, Advocate Rama, in future meetings I'll ask you to please go back, think, and please try and convince the most stubborn is myself. In the, so try and convince me. There is a definition in the Principal Act of the Community. No, not now, I mean, because of time. No, no, it's fine. They want another chance. By a now. All we are saying is convince the committee, as you initiated the recommendation to amend, convince the committee that this definition of community here, that's the principal act, is different from this definition that's the bill now. There is a difference. There is. I can read both, but I'm just respecting time. No. Rama, no. Polan. We're not adopting the bill today, so don't worry. But I am just saying, remember, I'm trying to clarify, don't own ideas, because when we interact with ideas, you will feel the pain as if we are denting you now. We're cutting your hair. No. We're dealing with ideas as something put there for all of us to really examine. Right. So there are two different definitions of community. What was the shortfall in the other definition, and what is the shortfall in the other? Nati, you are most welcome there. I saw Ungene Ukumbiri, you were sulking a bit when you came in, because probably you got a message that I'm making noise about the absence of parliamentary leader. You are most welcome, because we think that at the stage at which the platform is very mature, but at that stage you should have really understood the thought that would go into the formulation. So sorry, not if we disturbed you. There's a hell lot of work and there are few of yourself, but thank you for joining us, the parliamentary legal section. Yeah, thank you very much for joining us. So the definition is one thing that I wanted to raise. Somewhere there's a confusion about the committee and the CPA. The abuses, my honorable DM and my DG, Advocate Jonathan, anyone else, the abuses whereby the executive in Queenstown, the case that DL is talking about, and in Queenstown there's another case that I like talking about, the guy who sold back the property of the CPA and came here to Cape Town to buy taxes. So that's done not by the CPA, but it's done by the committee member, be it the chair, the secretary, the treasurer, or in the Rama situation up in Tswane, the relationship, this thing of having that relationship, not the deep analytical, the relationship, the affair, you hear me now? Between this treasurer and this chair makes them to sign off property of the people, right? That's I think that's the experience elsewhere. In particular, I think that's the case we had Ram. In order to have, that's the property amount, in order to have it to myself, I must just try and get closer and closer and closer to her, whatever it takes. Up until then, we are signatories who are able to sign off these millions worth of people's property. That's what has happened. But that abuse was not by CPA. It was by committee. That's the emphasis I wanted to make. Because we want to introduce community in order to avoid CPAs abusing. CPAs have never abused. It's the committees that have abused. CPAs have not really abused. But so to speak, there should be a median, statistician say so, the median, a common point at which we can then converge in trying to understand this. I think all of us will agree that there are beneficiaries, definite beneficiaries. All of us agree that there is CPA, Communal Property Association, and it's that beneficiary. The issue, at what point do you define community and how? The other important aspect, Advocate Rama, maybe you would want to comment, I'll give you, because I think you have a sense that you can dispense with this now. There's a term hold that is there in the Principal Act. in the reformulation, holds have been taken away. And now it's left with administer and manage. So plus, for goodness sake, excuse me being judgmental, plus have it. You have the prolegory, don't say I, don't say nay. I think the I have it. Plus have it there. Hold, why has hold been removed? And now that you want to respond now, I'm also hot and nice to hear the response. Why is the word hold taken out? Because this intelligentsia in such bodies, as both Lark and others, they must keep us on our toes where we make mistakes, unalert. Why is the word hold taken out? Because hold kind of still guarantees these land rights. And as the DM said, this government can never have an intention to take away. I really believe the DM, and I thought I see it through his spectacles. But what the DM was not necessarily talking to, Rama, that's why I'm referring it back to you. He was not referring to the removal of the word hold. The word hold has been removed. Why remove that word is very, very key. It at least is a semblance, carries a semblance for ownership. Now, if you remove hold and you are left with manage and administer, then these people are just managing and administering. Where Blas needs to be persuaded, in my view, is on the point that Advocate Rama was canvassing, Blas. That the minister, at least, if there's this, the states invest lots of money, it's like an RTP house. When someone sells, it would only be fair that the Minister of Human Settlement, at least, it means the department, when it says Minister delegates most. You know, you can't be giving this beneficiary a house today and then tomorrow he's just willy-nilly selling. So I thought that, Blas, you need to be persuaded in your understanding to understand the role of the minister in the proposed amendment. Minister stroke department, I say, because minister then delegates via the head of the department and delegates through to whatever. So the role of the minister, I see, is because you can't have the state and then you take off the state. Even in pure comments, you have a CC registered or what are the forms of company? CC or what LTD, PTY. But they still have a relationship with both SARS and CIPRO. What I call CIPRO now, I don't know. Right? So I thought that the registrar would be playing that role. It would not be overreach, as Advocate Rama was persuading us. I thought that I got that point well. There's a hard one for you, Flav, because we want to round up. There's a hard one for you that I'll refer back to you. You're really much more in the field of social and management sciences. You may not have checked your notes with your colleagues at geography, stroke geology, but I know it's geography. I did geography at UWC, by the way, after geography 3. This thing about inland survey. I have volumes, but in summary, if this CPA acquires this property without scientifically defined bounds, gradually, Honorable Madeira, you can help me because I want to give a live case. It's been reported to me. The honorable member who doesn't speak, who uses sign language, any English? Yeah, Honorable Wilma Drossen reported to me last week a case in George, somewhere there, where the people had this land, but the bigger land outlining them kept on being squeezed and squeezed and squeezed and squeezed. And she reported this to me and said, what can be done? And I said to her, I will refer it to yourself, ZTM. what can be done? I want the specifics of that case. So I am merely engaging Plus to say, Plus, if you have a
uncertainty about survey. Survey is an objective scientific process. Maybe I listen to you, Kumede, to be saying the cost for that survey. Then this is what definitely we need to take, and I think the committee would unanimously agree that if those costs have got to go to the department, so be it. But the survey protects. You can't talk and learn right without dimension, space, time, space, by the way. Survey is just a spatial determination. And Advocate Ramasala made a good case for not leaving out the rural areas in planning. I met the minister yesterday at the house, and during the break, minister said to me, but we also need to think carefully about land invasion. So there would never be land invasion, people appropriating maliciously with bad intent, even on a farm, even anywhere, because there's no survey. Why are you saying I'm on your land? Your land ends there. No. And I put my shack here or my whatever other objective, a blockyard or whatever I put there. So I just want to refer to BLAS that please persuade us further, either now or at next time through a submission and email, why you think that a survey should not be done. And I, not a book definition, but just a general knowledge definition, I define survey as determination of bounds and boundaries. It's very, very crucial. And you know that the coordinates, when you say, when you give those coordinates, it's very scientific. The 10th generation from you would still be able to go back to that pin. But if there's no such, then there's a CPA we own this land, there's another CPA next to us, and then there's an overlap, parallel structures, the government committed parallel structures, all organizations have parallel structures. So I thought that those are the two issues I'm referring there, both to the department and to plan. But insofar as all other issues, there's a retrospection that was raised by Prof. Hall in terms of the applicability of the bill. I thought we can take that as homework. We've had the point very well. But even then, retrospection will come if there's a different dispensation. If the whole term remains there, then we know that we are home, safe, and dry. Honourable Mandela, I guess, and then we'll see that question.
Chair, thank you. It's very brief. I think the thrust of process criticism with regard to that particular amendment doesn't relate to that. But just to answer your question, the bill currently makes provision for the TAP in terms of transfer, registration, serving will be the department and the full responsibility. But the thrust of the criticism was the elect, the omission of participation from the community. Because that section clearly spells out quite a number of things that should happen. But it does not indicate, I also looked through that particular act that does not. It's a quite, the Land Survey Act, it's a very technical thing, but it does not speak to community participation. And I think that is something that needs to be looked at. That those that are beneficiaries, that are landowners, must have a say in how their land are being developed. That is essentially what I think.
Thank you, thank you very much for the question. You see, I think the confusion as to who the real owner is clarified in the definition of community. Whether you look at the old definition or the new definition. It has not changed in that society. The only change that the bill is making to the definition is the intention of labor tenants. The rest remains the same. Now, why that is important? It's because in my view, that definition says who is the owner of the property. It says community means a group of persons, including labor tenants, the new intention. If you take that out,
yeah,
you are still reading the old definition. It says whose right to a particular property. Now, who have the right to a particular property? It is the community as defined in the Act and in the Bill. Is the chair?
Yes, absolutely.
I'm saying the definition tells you who is the owner of the property. Because it says it is a community, including, okay, whose right to a particular property, that tells you that they are the owners of the property. The community is the owner of the property. Are determined by shared rules under a written constitution. Now, the Elections besides the constitution, that for me distinguishes between beneficiaries and other community members who may be, you know, invaders or people who extended, because those other persons are not in the constitution of the community. And like I said earlier, if you look at the constitution, the issues that must be in the constitution of the CPA, item 5 tells you that in the constitution of that community, there must be a list of beneficiaries, a name, or at least a principle that defines, you know, who qualifies to be a member. So that to me, Chair, if you look at the definition, it tells you the community is the owner of the property. Now, this is not, it's not a new definition, like I'm saying. Community has always owned property. Now, where the confusion arose is in the way holding that is in section 8, which is the way you are trying to take up, because it suggests that now a CPA, which is a legal entity, not the community, is the owner. That's the confusion we are trying to clear by taking out the word hold, because the word community, emphasized, even in the old act, tells you that it is the community that is the owner of the property, not the legal entity called the CPA. I'm sure that should clarify. I think also that is the way hold in the process of explaining.
Yes.
Because it is the way that caused the confusion as to who has ownership over the property. The definition of community tells you it is a community. And that's why we are dealing with the way we are taking out the way to hold, except to bring confusion where the legal entity now, through its functionary, who are committee members, the executive, started to transact on the land that is their own land. The legal entity instead of the land being owned by the community. In terms of the act, who are the actual owners of the land.
I think we're fine about now this, but Prof. Hall, I took a firm challenge to your court, you know, in the tennis court when the ball is hit one side to the other, on survey. Honorable, that's your alumnus, Prof. Yeah. But Honorable Madela has clarified to some extent, but because I thought that you are proposing that the survey thing must stay out of. But Orad Mandela was clarifying, you know, clarification that I thought perhaps is so I would just like to hear, because I was saying there's no way. There is no way you could just define people without defining space, and there's a scientific definition of space. It only comes through one and one only kind of qualification called land survey. So if there's no survey in place, this CPA would be having this idea of their land, but systematically it could be cut into by some form of invasion. So I thought that the formulation by the department to have scientific parameters defining the space, I thought that is really spot on. I'm not sure if we're on the same page now, maybe with the clarification done by Arad Madel.
Thank you, Chair. I'll respond very briefly. I think that it's very correct to say that we have a lot of experience of CPAs being dysfunctional, and part of that dysfunction has had to do with failure to clarify what exactly the roles are in terms of managing the land, allocating the land, what actual land rights an allocation of land happening for the members of that CPA. And in fact, in 2005, we worked on commission from the Department of what was then Land Affairs, together with the CSIR and Legal Resources Center, and came up with a big review of CPIs with a whole lot of suggestions. And one of the main suggestions of that is that CPAs are the entities that hold the land. But there might be different entities that operate businesses on the land, and those are separate.
Yeah.
And we need to hold them separate, because the CPA represents all the people who hold the land. Holding means ownership. And ownership is not the same as a business entity.
Mm.
So we wanted to distinguish that. So I hear Honorable Madela's point. Our response around the issue of a general plan is a general plan, and here you need to talk to planners, people who have the profession of planning.
Mm.
And I actually have a specific suggestion, which is this Dr. Siyabu Manona, who's been working in the Eastern Cape, who is a planner, who's been working on these issues. And he has a very strong and clear view based on his experience in the Eastern Cape and Free State about why a general plan is an inappropriate and highly onerous, expensive, and complicated measure. And he's saying there are other ways to do it. So let me just leave that. But finally, in response to the advocate, the question about who is the owner of the land? And this relates, let's be clear, this relates to redistribution land, restitution land, land where there's been a tenure upgrade. If the community is the owner, then the community must become a legal entity. Because community otherwise is just a vague word for lots of people, right? It's not a legal term. It's like if you own a house in, I don't know where people live, in Sandton. But then suddenly 400 other households get to decide about your property. Yeah, well then we need to have a clear legal definition of what that property is. If we say the community has always owned property, yes, the community owns property through a CPA. If we now say the CPA does not own it, the community owns it and the CPA transacts it, then we have a fundamental violation of natural law principles, which is that one entity owns and another entity transacts. Now, if somebody else transacts my property, there's a problem. That's called an expropriation. So I think that, going back to the advocate's point, that the word hold is actually absolutely central to this point. But again, I would emphasize that we need to think about this politically, this law, this proposed bill, politically. And the reason why I say that is that there are other bills that are also coming in that are saying there should never be CPAs on communal land. And the minister has said there should never be CPAs on communal land because traditional councils are objecting to having CPAs on communal land. So on the one hand, the minister is saying people should choose. You can have a traditional council or you can have a CPA. But even if you choose a CPA, the CPA does not own it. So that is why I think that we need to, and I really appreciate the comments from the chair. I think that the onus is on the department to go back and explain why on earth would you say that communities who are acquiring land, who are holding it through CPAs, should not be the owners of that land.
Quite convincing, however, one time. Yeah? A good take, Prof. Thank you so much. Department, insofar as the aspect that was responding to FLAP, I suppose will be much more summarizing on ADA. Also, I have seen your submissions as talking to ADA, but you'll just highlight on ADA. But we wanted a good engagement. It must be worth their while FLAP to make the sacrifice and come, because we have invited all others and they could not make the sacrifice to come. So that's why we really had to engage much more extensively with FLAP. We are not able to conclude matters, but we were brainstorming, for lack of a better word, were brainstorming approaches then to, you know, the ramifications. What is it that can come out of what we are doing, and then what of how we're formulated and so forth. One, but then I'm happy that Nati, you are in the room, because you would have captured what issues are sticking points. They will ultimately go to legal, but Advocate Ramazala insisted that no, they're not legal. They will ultimately go to legal. You know, because there's an issue about the word hold, and it's being put somewhere and not elsewhere. All those who tend to the legal. Sometimes I've read legal people in English. We say may means it's not obligatory, but legal people say sometimes may is obligatory. So it depends. So that's why we wanted the legal as well. you remember? But English, we don't study. Thank you very much, DM. Yeah. Thank you very much. The issues are well explained in the documents, both of the department and of I ask committee members, Honorable Babama, starting from you, colleagues were generally saying we need to go back and refine our approach, our understanding. I think that's what we will do with the wisdom now acquired. Acting DG, we are at your hands to really sum up two or three points about other submissions. We have received them. The committee time will the committee will then look at that and take a stance. If there are any issues that you think they are further worth a further engagement. By the way, in passing a prof on. I don't know if the land surveyor or the gentleman you are referring to can sponsor us with a two-page kind of to back up the motivation on the survey issue. Remember, with some geography background, I'm bound to be very, very rigid on issues of no survey, land to the people, no survey. But I think there is a professional motivation you have outlined. If you can sponsor us with a two-page via the committee secretariat or via yourself, because anyway it's supporting your argument, you know. Yeah, that would be that. Mr. Ramasala, you wanna acting DG? You wanna talk on further issues?
Thank you, Chair. No, I think if you want us to, maybe in 5 minutes, we can go through just some of the other issues that may not have been touched now. But I think in general, the issue of community, like you indicated, is raised more than once by others. Yes, but let Mr. Ramasala, with your permission, take us through the other ones very quickly, and then we'll make some conclusions.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Maybe quickly, the last for the closing notes by Prof. So how can one hold property and somebody can act on that property? The simple example is I may own property and give my tenant opportunity to transact on that property. The same could be said of land that is under the cost of tax. The trustee, if he wants to transact on the land, they must advance security because that they do not own the property that is owned by the beneficiary. So you can transfer.
So who would be sued in the property logic I read it well, or if I bought into it well, who would be sued when your attorney transacts on your behalf, on your property?
It depends on the cause of action. In the cause of action, the manner in which the attorney acted in transacting, or is the owner a debtor? If the owner of the land is a debtor, for instance, where is being sued? I mean, there was an example, I think, in the first case where we had that land was restituted to the CPA, and then there were some problems with the contract that involved a cell phone thing that was on the land. And then as a result, what happened is that the farmer from whom the land was bought in the first place sued the community, and then even had the land taken away from the community and given to him because he had won a case against him. Apparently they owed him for the money that they were receiving from the cell phone company. I'm just giving an example. Mm-hmm. That's who can be sued. It depends on the course of action. Who was wrong in that particular transaction. The point I'm making is that if it is a attorney who during the transaction made something wrong, then he could be sued or you could be reported to the local society. But if the debtor is the society or the owner or the community, the owner, then it should be the community.
Thank you. Before you proceed, the public are criticizing us even for bringing water in the meeting and talking all sorts of far-fetched things. Now, you don't know when your voice is going also that you should drink water because I'll still read the Facebook critique that I think is very, very, very unfair, grossly unfair against one member. Excuse me, I'm not going to drink the water. The case of ITB and the Attorney General and the Department, the one where opinion and parliamentary legal thing is almost a similar case in terms of picture to this, you know, because there is a situation by which the owner is the trustee is the king, and the board is the administrator, if you like, right? But I don't want to open that. That's not what we're discussing. But there is an opinion, Advocate Gauntlet, that says combine. There's still an ongoing discussion, right? AG says, for all the purposes, listing schedule 2, schedule 1, we cannot combine. So, but I don't want to cloud these issues, but in my line of thought, there are some parallels with this case, where there's a community and there's a, you know. But go on, you wanted to take up 2 or 3 more points?
Yes, maybe. The first example I gave, it's not related at all to the ITB. The ITB is a trust of its kind. It's not the kind of trust that I had in mind when I was talking about. I was talking about trust property. That talks about other trusts. The ITB land belongs to the state. That since then, it invests in the trust. Not the trust in terms of trust property. Trust.
I know you have not caught my point at all. You way off the tangent. I'm talking issue of the owner versus the executive, you know. That's the only principle I'm talking to. I'm not talking the modalities at all. But leave it because we're not discussing that now. If that example in your analogy is confusing, let's just take that out. Stick to the point you wanted to. I don't know about the pressure of people who keeps on opening the door. I do know that we have the venue to ask that, just content. So may their souls rest in peace. Let's just continue.
Okay, I'll start with the comments that were raised by the General Public and we'll skip those that have already spoken about in the course of the discussion. One of the comments was that the bills should not apply in areas under the jurisdiction of traditional councils. I think the point that was also raised by the American party. The bill, as our response indicates, is a law of general application. It applies everywhere in this country where people choose to come into here, whether it's in traditional authorities or not. That should be mentioned. And oh, there was also reference made by a class to the Common Land and Tenure Bill, what the provisions are in that bill. I asked them to look at that bill when it is brought to this committee, because the provisions are different. The definition of community is different. plot is a community for different purposes. The issue of labor tenants, I think I've explained it, that it's an option, it's not compulsory, they should accept the CPA. The functions of the registrar, we have heard the comments that they are interfering with the right of ownership. Remember in the deed and in the act, the registrar, among some of the functions, is that before a CPA opens a bank account, they must have a letter from the registrar confirming that indeed the CPA has complied with the provisions of the act in general terms. If I can explain the justification for that as an example, is that we have instances where executive members have opened bank accounts that community members were not aware of and diverted funds to, I mean, there's been a lot of acts, right? That's what I'm trying to protect. That part of the registrar or this part of trying to assist CPA's in the administration of the affairs of the community. There was an issue that has been raised by many stakeholders with regard to the 60% threshold that appears in the bill in two instances. In the first instance, in relation to the adoption of the constitution of the CPA. We are saying that the 60% of the beneficiaries must approve that draft consent defense can be adopted. What we have heard from the public is that sometimes it's difficult to convene meetings of CPA members, and if you talk about 60%, when it's already difficult for them to even have 50+1, it's too onerous on them. But like I was saying, the idea to raise the bar is to protect the beneficiaries. The second instance of the 60% of the community is where the CPA decides to sell the land, that must be approved by 60% of the beneficiaries. The other power complaint about from the registrar is to dissolve CPA committee members. Committees where there have been acts of impropriety, for instance. The other point raised was there is a provision that deals with the payment of fees in the bill. People are saying that it's unfair to require persons to pay a certain fee before they can do certain things in terms of the act. We are saying this as kind of provision, and that it will not apply in all instances. There will be instances where payment for fees may be required, but in any event, we are saying that before fees are determined, that public performance will be comment on those proposed fees. Labor tenants have fees. The general plans, I think, have also dealt with. Minister concerns. There was also comment made that in the bill and in the act, it doesn't provide for a situation where people or some of the beneficiaries may want to withdraw from the CPA. And we are saying that there is a clause in the act that provides for that. If you go to the schedule for the act, I think it's item 9, indicates that in the constitution of the CPA, it must be indicated how each member wants to insist on the members, how that should be dealt with. It could mean other members, remaining members, maybe paying or purchasing their share of the shares of the land. But that must be clarified in the constitution of the CPA. That's all, Chair. In addition to what we've been said, that's all that we have, that we got from the stakeholders.
Thank you very much, Chair. Some share this. I think one of my friends is being whisked away. We don't know if he's pronounced a minister or something. We can only wish all the best. The issues that you have now just further outlined, I think that we note them, and I think that there also is space to further engage and refine. But the key issues of principle largely have been canvassed under the earlier discussion. So I do not know, I'll depend on the wisdom of the members. Yeah, I would have thought also, Honorable Walters, that perhaps we note Advocate Jonathan, the submission you're making in response to the other issues, but you know then when we're doing a further refinement line by line, we would then fit to engage a little bit more. Yeah.
Chair, I think from our side then also to say thank you very much for the inputs that have been received, also from CLAS. I think in the making of legislation it is important that we do look at all possible views, because I think the intent is for us to make sure we serve our people correctly. So I think we do appreciate the comments, and even as we prepare to come back, as you had indicated, we will be together in going through this, and we will really look at those causes as well. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks very much, DG. I think perhaps I'll give a plus for just courtesy or ceremonial word also. But also, department plus all our NGO community, civil society, formations dealing with land. We appreciate all the time, that your bodies are so seized with issues as if you are working for argument's sake, like in the department, and so seized with the issues. Honestly, it's really, really marvelous. And we dare not, I think I speak on behalf of all the committee, we dare not alienate the intellectual community from the work we are doing as government. We know exactly now, fresh as this week, what happens when you alienate everyone and you remain running with the ball only to find the whole teams are left behind, and then there are consequences. So it's really great to work with our intelligentsia, and they keep teasing us, they keep going deep, and all that, so that we are really quite sharp in our execution, you know. Yeah. And here and there issues then can strike a media, and here and there it's just a question of choice and option sometimes. But sometimes the choice is wrong. You take this route, it's going down the cliff. In the rural area there are cliffs, and then you take this route here and that a school is that side, then you go down the cliff, you roll. So that wisdom of teasing out everything to the most minute detail is important. But like we said, back to the beautiful ladies and gentlemen sitting on this side, it's also got to do with the political system. Because we may give these rights, houses, what, and then the environment, the market forces might be following our work and undoing our work. How to safeguard, I think, is an area for, it's really very sophisticated question. It's an area for how to safeguard that all that you are doing. But you don't want to give half rights, because you are protecting on behalf of the people. Because half rights become the no rights. At some stage, people don't want to be administering and now we want people to have full rights, honorable orders, especially individual rights, like you say. I think we agree firmly there. Capacitation of the people and so on. It's very difficult in the economic development arena. It's very difficult to be certain that this model is taking us forward. So thank you very much for that. Plus, you have any comment? Yeah, no, thank you. Then back to us, committee. I think we covered also the aspect on the
on the way forward. I just want to suggest at this stage to colleagues and thank everyone. I have a special word for Honorable Magalda. You might see her here, but I am aware that she has a very ill parent-in-law, and she told me she will have to join the committee just to meet her public mandate, but on the other side, she has that kind of predicament. It's a very, very dire situation. And we wish all the best, Honorable Magasa, to your parent-in-law. And pity I don't have good religious words. Next time I'll improve. Yeah. But all the best. We wish that there's recovery as soon as possible. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.